Hi.
Hi, Debbie.
What's going on, Debbie?
I am so excited to speak with the two of you after seeing what you have done with Okie. And Kate, as your first feature directorial, this is lovely. You have,
oh my God,
you have so many terrific elements in here to build this story. Number one, starting with Kevin's script. It is so believable. It is so well done from a character development standpoint. And then Kate, you and your cinematographer pick up with that and you bring in beautiful visual grammar that celebrates natural light, that captures, you've got some real money shots in those, in some of those night scenes, I got to tell you.
Oh, yeah. Thank you. Gosh, thank you so much. Thank you for noticing that it's natural light a lot of it. That's really great.
That's a great way to start the day, Debbie.
I'm glad. It's always a good start to my day when I have enthusiastic filmmakers who wanted to make a really good film and succeeded in doing it.
Thank you.
So I'm curious where you guys started with this. I know, Kevin, you had written a short that kind of turned out as the proof of concept for Okie in order to get funding, and all those people that invested, I'm glad they did, because that's always a crapshoot. So how do you go from a proof of concept, a small idea, and expand on that into a bigger idea to make a feature?
Wow, really cool. First off, those were wonderful things that you said, but also very, like, it's always nice when we've seen, like, so many people do write-ups and things where they've actually put so much thought into things like that, like Kate's natural light and kind of the cinematography and all that. So, you know, compared to just a watch where people are just kind of, you know, taking in content more than a film. We started, so Kate and I, today is our 10-year wedding anniversary.
Well, happy anniversary.
We've been together for 15 years, 10 years married. So, you know, we're celebrating for multiple reasons, but we have always kind of worked together. We went to college together at DePaul University, so we met there, and we were in a play together. So our relationship started with working together. So, you know, flash forward, and we had kind of gotten busy in our respective acting careers, and Kate kind of slowly transitioning into directing, and me is the same with doing a lot of writing, and I sold a feature, and we wanted to use that momentum to maybe get something done just for us, and us working together and bringing into the fold some people we had come up with through sketch. So sketch comedy with Funny or Die. So we did this short, we wrote it for something really cheap, like my hometown in Northern California, north of Sacramento. We shot it there, and the whole intent from the get-go was to try to get funding for a feature. So it wasn't one of those shorts that we spent a ton of money on. We self-funded. We were really scrappy with it, and that really showed Chicago Media Angels that we could stretch a dollar and make a film look expensive. Kate and our cinematographer, Wojtek Kilar, specifically. So we went from there, and that's what happened.
How did you go about developing your characters here? Because these are really interesting characters, Kevin. Having been in small towns before, rural communities, these are the people you're going to find.
To me, it's that I wanted it to feel authentic, but also have this air of, like, surreality. Like, are these people even, you know, are they real? Where sometimes it can feel almost caricature-y, but that's so much like I grew up. Sometimes we would laugh about how on the nose we were doing things, you know, like, I wanted to, in particular with Travis, have this character that was an embodiment of the place that Louis has lost touch with. Like, he's kind of animalistic almost in a fun way, you know, it's like kind of if you're going for a hike and you see a coyote, it can be an exciting kind of, you know, fun experience, but if it starts coming towards you and starts invading your space, well, now it's kind of a little scary. So there's a push-pull there with that. And then Louis, a lot of Louis was based upon kind of the fears that I have myself as a writer when you let kind of ego take over, and you feel that everything belongs to you, and that you're this reflection of society and the world and all these stories, when in reality you're kind of absorbing those things and taking them for your own, and then slapping your name on a book, or a script or whatever, and calling it your story. And, you know, that push and pull there, there was a California Split, the Robert Altman movie, was a really big influence for us. Because there's a lot of chaos and stuff, you know, and like those Altman movies, and in this movie there's like the races and all that stuff. But well, we wanted to have this arc where you're enamored with the nostalgia of this place and these characters, but then slowly it becomes so draining because you're drinking and staying up and all that stuff, yeah.
Well, something that's really interesting with these characters is the fact that, and especially with Travis, and I love your performance as Travis, and the way that you get introduced to us with, and this is kudos to you, Kate, and Wojciech, because the first time we see Travis, he's up, comes out of the door, he's up on the porch. And you've got a dutching happening there. So we're getting a sense of power already. You know, a David and Goliath almost situation here.
Are you a director?
No one has noticed
that. No one has noticed that. That was, it's so funny because that was like such a, we thought so much. I thought so much about how he needs to first go into this world. Like we have him descending into this kind of like almost, as a director, I steal so much from other, I love movies and I steal so much from other movies. And we thought a lot about the beginning of the movie feeling like a little bit with the score and about what we're seeing a little bit like The Shining, like we're kind of descending into the Overlook a little.
Yeah.
It was like that kind of descension into this otherworldly kind of feeling. And so then beyond that, we thought like, what should be the first moment of him, meet, like seeing these people again? How should he meet this representation of the town again? And we thought really hard about, like, I really thought that the levels of, you know, Travis being really close to his home, like looking into the windows of his home, and that kind of vulnerability it would give you if somebody was looking into your windows, and then being kind of higher than him, and yes, having that kind of like high angle shot, and having them on different levels, I was hoping that visually, like without even, you know, the nerdy cinematography, mise-en-scène stuff aside, I was hoping that it would just naturally feel like all of a sudden there is a change in the balance of energy, and a change in the balance of kind of like who is on top now.
And you feel that immediately. So, with that shot, Kate, you feel that immediately, that there is a shift in the zeitgeist of this town and in Louis's perception of what's going on. But I found, and this is where your casting was also very important, to have Kevin, who's bulkier, and he's the guy that every girl in high school wanted to, he's the quarterback. That's who everybody wants to be with. He's handsome.
Don't stroke his ego like that. That's the last thing we need.
Okay, you're awful. You're awful. You were, you're awful.
I was like 5 foot straight up. I was closer to Louis, but yeah, that's exactly what that character is.
Yeah, but to see that differential, and we feel it's almost like Travis being bulked up and all. He is the protector of the town, and Louis is now an outsider.
Yeah,
and
so great. That's really great because that's so true. Because we're very good friends with and he actually married us, which, so it's funny because it's like our tenure, is Bob Fisher, who wrote Wedding Crashers. He had they had thought in casting with Bradley Cooper as that villain that he needed to gain a bunch of weight, because when you have like comedic people or just actors in a frame, you know, especially we're both like mid-30s white guys, it's like, how do you differentiate these people? And for me, I'm already bulkier, but then was getting bulkier in that time. And it was like filling the frame and enhancing that even with like the deep cut tanks and all this stuff. It's like, couldn't be more opposite, to where even just my physical presence is making him uneasy and pushing him, you know? So it's like Kate balancing the frames with the two of us in there. you, like, you're talking about the scales, Debbie, and how they're being tipped. That's, like, just physically they're being tipped in the frame.
Yeah.
You know? It was really cool and necessary.
Yeah, and it really, it works so much because you understand from that perspective how Louis is suddenly being roped into every scheme that Travis seems to have. No, come on, we're going to a party at Steve's. Oh, it's a pool party. Don't worry. I got swim trunks for you. It's like, oh, let's go to the fair. Hey, I got some weed. Oh, I got shrooms. And it's like, there, Louis was powerless.
Yeah. How do you say no? How do you say no to the, not only that, like, that kind of influence of, like, personality and of, like, kind of the laissez-faire, even though, like, I would say Travis is anything but laissez-faire, but, like, that kind of attitude, but then also the physical presence, too, put together,
yeah,
it's hard to say no.
Very much so, and it just works so well. But this is where, and you surround the town, you populate the town with interesting people. I got to say, I like Pete the Garage Guy. He is the most...
Me too.
Jimmy Callahan. Yeah. Yeah.
He is the most down-to-earth, honest character in the entire film. He has no agenda. He's not involved in any hijinks. He just wants to fix a car.
And he's like, he's a guy who... Yeah, he showed up here, and it's like he's trying to, like, be friendly and balance out Louis's just absolutely chaotic energy.
Yeah,
and you feel for him so much because it's not like he's a dummy wandering around. That's how Louis's perceiving him.
Yeah,
but then he's like, "Yeah, I fixed your car in a day because he's really good at his job."
Yeah, right.
You know, but from Louis's perspective, which it was a thing obviously we played with in this movie is, you know, Kevin kind of touched on that. It was like. A lot of I'm glad when people pick up on the wholeness of these characters because there were choices that we made deliberately to make you wonder if you were seeing this character as they actually are or if you're seeing them through Louis's perspective. So when it comes to Lainey, it's like, are her shorts really that short? You know, or is that how he's seeing her? You know, is Pete really that dirty? Or is that it, or is he putting this caricature onto Pete? About what he should look like, you know. It's so we kind of were playing with that. So it's nice that people are picking up on that kind of, you know, that balance that we kind of have.
I also like that we have people like Pete, and we have even people like Kevin Miller, where they have it. They're living in this town, and they're not like Travis, and they're not like Lainey, and you know, or even Steve. It's like you don't have to dress a certain way. You don't have to act a certain way. You know, Kevin's like this little squirrely guy who's running around, and then here's Pete who's just, you know, making a living. And honestly, because he doesn't have all of those different kind of traits and whatnot, like, and nothing, like, so much tragedy has happened to, like, someone like Steve and even, like, miniature tragedies to Lainey, like, you have someone like Pete and... just like in my hometown, he's just doing his job, you know, and he's just living a normal life. And I actually think that's the scene, both scenes, is where Louis looks the worst, is because there's no reason to beat up on Pete and to be mean to Pete. He's fixing your car. So it's an interesting character-y thing to us.
This is where your casting comes into play again, because you've got Scott playing Louis, and that opening scene with Pete, and he hands him the credit card key for the car. He is so condescending and so insulting to Pete. It's kind of like, you aren't fit to wipe my boots. It's, you know, a Scarlett O'Hara moment. And that's exactly how that felt. And then you, in the end, but what is so critical here that fascinates me, Kate, what you have done working with Wojciech and then your editors is we don't feel the passage of time. We are in this whirlwind with Louis. Where everything is just running. Time is just meld enfolding upon itself. Yeah. We don't know how much time is passing. Yeah, alleged fiance Bridget shows up yelling, no, you've been here 5 days. But everything has just been such a constant stream of consciousness.
Yeah, that was a real important thing, I think, to feel. One of the reasons why, like, I love including touching on kind of like mental illness in my films. I'm really interested in that subject because I think one of the things that scares me more than anything in the world is not being able to trust your own mind.
Yeah.
And that's something that like, of course I explore it in everything that I make because it's like, I love to, you know, unfold those fears in this way. And I think it's like the idea of, you know, everyone has been on that, you know, at some point in their lives, most people have been on that kind of like, you're out somewhere, you're with your friends in college, and you're going out, and you're drinking a ton, and you're staying up super late, and then you're sleeping late into the day, and then you have things to do, but you've forgotten, and, you know, everyone has these kind of, like, memories of when all of a sudden it felt like life was moving, and you were trying to hold on to it, but slipping out of your hands, and you just can't get a grip on your life that's moving forward, and I think, like, that is such a scary feeling, and that's something that I wanted you to feel kind of like compressed in this world, and that it was moving. And Scott is so good as an actor. We've said this a million times. He's so good at looking and the act of feeling, uneasy or like everything is happening to him. And I think that that's what's interesting is that Louis, who's the guy who's controlling all these narratives, he's controlling all these stories, he's controlling how people are perceived, but he is absolutely not in control the entire movie. And I think that is like, that flip is so important for us as an audience to feel that lack of control and that kind of, like you're slipping off the edge of a cliff and you can't stop, you know?
Well, one of the interesting things as I was watching this and watching everything implode and in unfold upon itself was I kept wondering, because we're seeing some mental instability within Louis, be it from all the drugs and alcohol he's consuming or from his real illness or a combination of both, reaches a point, it makes you wonder, is he just imagining all of this? The entire thing. Is this the setup for his third book that he's supposed to be writing?
So it's a great question.
I kept wondering, you know, I got to a point, it's like, okay, is it live or is it Memorex in Louis's mind, the writer in him? Yeah. Or did he just imagine himself as a successful writer?
You know, it's so funny that you say that because we had many drafts where we were playing with that idea. One of the drafts, actually, we had him, when he was driving in, listening to one of his own interviews on NPR. So he's, like, re-listening to an interview he did as an author in NPR. And then as he gets into the town, the radio starts to kind of go fuzzy, and then it clicks off, and then the entire movie happens. And then on his way out of town at the end, as he's driving out, the radio clicks on again, and all of a sudden it's the same interview. And so you get this feeling of, did this whole thing happen?
Yeah.
Or was it all in his imagination as he was driving through the town? And I think it's like that. I think that even though we didn't end up, you know, choosing that narrative specifically, I do think that that feeling is still there. Of like once you have an unreliable narrator, there's
anything
the rules that you have, you know, you get to explore and you get to let people. This is why it's so fun, because when people ask me, well, what was exactly the mental illness he had, or what exactly happened to him, or what exactly is happening in the end, I love that people get to, I know people love a concise ending, but I love that people get to put their own imagination in it. I think that's part of what makes a movie intriguing, and what makes people really put their own emotions into it is when they can lend their imagination to it. So that's kind of what we were aiming for there.
Yeah, well, you definitely succeeded there. And I like the fact that the whole storyline is open to interpretation with these characters. Now, I've got to ask you. Yes, Kevin, go ahead.
Yeah, I was just going to say, even with his books, it's like there's not even really a definition of what exact writer he is.
Yeah.
But I think everyone's brain just fills it in what kind of writer he is. You know, you kind of know.
Yeah, let your audience be smart.
Yeah, they you know? Because it's just like, and it was like a Stephen King type thing, is that it's a writer. And so we will, is it kind of horror? Is it rustic anthology, which is kind of what we were thinking more of? But we're like, but if you fill in the blanks, let's not kind of fill it out for you, you know?
And something that I found that stuck out for me was, everybody's like, oh, yeah, great book, read your book. Now, Lainey is the only one who can actually quote something directly from the book. And It is the least likely thing you would expect anybody to remember and quote out of a book. And I kept wondering, did anybody actually read the book? And I say that because in over 42 years as a critic, and yes, I have produced and directed stuff in the past, Kate, but
I knew it.
In all these decades, even my own family members have never read a review that I've done, have never listened to my weekly show. Never, let alone people that I grew up with. Never. So yeah. I find it very plausible that these people, they're just like placating him and saying, hey, yeah, great job, blah, blah, blah. Well, on the back of their mind, it's like, I really don't give a rat's ass about you.
Yeah.
It's that, yeah, I mean, and the interesting thing about that, and I think the same thing. I think that there's a lot of people who haven't read his book.
Yeah.
A lot of people who are, or who hate read his book, or, you know, that kind of like, I'm going to avoid this thing that everybody else is reading kind of vibe. But I also think that what's cool about that is that because they haven't actually consumed his art, they are making him into a caricature just the same way that he's doing it to them. You know, it's like they're just assuming he's a writer, X, Y, and Z. Yeah, it was probably all bullshit. It was probably all inflamed or, you know, whatever. And so in a lot of ways, it's true that you know, Louis is on his heels and a little bit trying, you know, that's what I love is like, I don't side with Louis and I don't side with the town. I both of them, they come in and out of, you know, my good graces.
Yes.
You know, as the movie goes. But it's interesting to watch people who are doing the same thing to each other and both expecting a different outcome.
Yes. Talk to me, Kate, about working with Wojciech, with your cinematographer, and developing your visual grammar here. Because, as I mentioned, I love the natural light, your use of it. The night scenes are stunning. As we go, we've got the fair, but then we have a different kind of tone with the, is it live or is it Memorex, out on the dark road with no street lights and fog rolls in. And then we've got the football field scenes at night with the lighting of the stadium lights is beautiful. You've got some sunset shots, but there are moments where you clearly went with handheld camera. Because when Louis is really spiraling.
Yeah.
So I'm curious how you and Wojciech developed the visual grammar to give us the visual tonal bandwidth that we have.
Yeah. So that's a great, all of those are great, you're noticing such great things. You know, first of all, Wojciech Hilar, we've been working with him since we left college. So we've known him for a really long time. I don't ever want to work with anybody else. I can't overstate the amount of care and creativity that he brings to everything that we do. He is I feel like he's my other half when I'm working on something like this, when it comes to like a creative project. The thing I talk about a lot is I'm a big pre-production person because when you're making an indie, sometimes it's hard to, you can't be as flexible as you want to be because you don't have the time or the money to be like, the light's not right, let's move it to another day. You know, you have to really be flexible and focused. And so I am really, really into pre-production. So, and I've said this a million times, but every frame that you see in that film, I drew as storyboards. So I storyboarded every single second of the movie. And while, you know, of course we were flexible with like the exact, you know, what was in each frame or exactly what we were doing, that part was a lot of pre-production. And so because that was there and because we had that base of, of storytelling, we were able to be more flexible on the day and say, oh, actually, the sun is over here. Let's move slightly this way. But we know what we need for this. So there was a lot of planning that went into those shots. You know, for example, the shot in the barn with the pig, that was a shot that we, you know, we had our crew split and we had half of our Genie team working on setting that shot up while I was working with the actors shooting another scene because that shot took us such a long time to set up because we had to put a track up for the pig and all of this stuff. But we waited until, you know, so they're working on that for three or four hours. we had to wait until the perfect golden hour moment, and we shot that scene in 9 minutes.
Oh my God!
We only had 9 minutes to shoot it. So the scene itself is about like 90 seconds.
Yeah.
And so you can imagine how we would shoot that scene, and I would go reset, reset, and everyone would run in, and we'd all grab the pig together, and we'd put it back up, and then everybody would get back into place, and we'd put the garage door down, and we'd go 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 go, and we'd shoot it again. And so we were able to shoot it, I think, four times. We shot that scene four times. But it was because the most important part of that was what you got to see. It was that night shot. It was that beautiful kind of the balance between that bucolic lighting and then that gritty darkness that was kind of seeping in on the edges. Like,
yeah,
that was, so it's so nice that it, you know, that I have a team that's willing to try to put that imagination on the screen.
And Wojtek, I'll just speak on this. Wojtek has a very, his cinematic language is usually just, he has a way of making things very beautiful.
Yes.
And Kate has a way of making things very gritty. And they just, they complement each other so well. It's fantastic.
Like, he's always saying, we need more light. And I'm always like, no, we don't. And then, you know, I remember telling him that I wanted to light an entire scene with just flashlights. And it took a lot of convincing. And in the end, he did do some backlighting. And we did do, you know, we found a compromise. But I think that we both challenge each other in the right ways. So that he is always making sure that everything is legible and that it's really conscious and well thought out, and then I'm dragging him into the dirt.
Yeah.
So it's a good balance.
But yeah, it, that works really well. It's two sides of the same coin, so that we really get to understand the characters and this world. And that barn scene with the pig, Kevin, you can always go get a job as a butcher after this one.
I know. I feel good about it. We'll see how the movie goes.
At least lifting pigs, he'd be really good at that.
I'm your pig lifter.
You're a pig lifter. I've also got to compliment your visual effects here, working with that, because we're torturing Louis. He's getting, you know, dunked. And I love how you go into close-ups on those scenes. You never really give us extreme close-ups in this film. You keep us either in a wide to give us an overall perspective, a moment to breathe, or the mid shots, because there's generally more than one person involved with Louis in almost every shot. But you've got the dunk scene at the fair, you've got everybody strung out, so that the camera work even and the visual effects that come in there with the blurring, the twisting, the hallucinogenic VFX that you incorporate works really, really well. And helps keep us off kilter.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, I mean, that was the stuff, what you mentioned before about the handheld stuff.
Yeah.
You know, like, a lot of my visual language, first of all, like I said, is stolen from other, you know, there's a lot of, you know, movies that I'm emulating. But beyond that, you know, I'm very much a bird in the hand type of person. Although, Wojtek would love it if we had a Steadicam, you know, for every scene, but a Steadicam requires a lot of money, a lot of work, a lot of people, a lot of setup.
Yeah.
And so I'm always like, hey, how about handheld here? Like, hey, how about a really loose movie? Or, you know, and I think, for me, I love limitations. I love when we don't have a ton of time and we don't have a ton of equipment, because I believe it makes you so, so, so much more creative as an artist when you have guardrails that you can't, you have to think of way more creative outcomes. If I had all the money in the world, it would absolutely terrify me to try to make art with that. Because to me, my brain is so much better at problem solving than it is at inventing.
Yeah.
You know, so for me personally, I love the idea of being like, well, we don't have a lot of equipment, so actually, why don't we focus on a handheld moment here, and we'll shoot it much faster, or let's do this long one-er where we're not going to catch every single thing, but what we are going to do is catch a feeling and a tone.
Yeah.
And, you know, using that moving forward. And to me, that's, a lot of that stuff ends up being more emotive than if I, you know, would have had 10 Steadicam operators on set that day.
Yeah. No, it just, it looks so beautiful. It works so well. Now, I've got to ask, how challenging was the editing process on this one?
Yeah, you know, luckily, Chris Hurt, Joseph Ettinger, two really talented editors that we were working with. And, you know, editing was challenging because I think, you know, when so we shot this entire film in 15 days. So, you know, there weren't a whole lot of days where we had the time to be like, let's go get a ton of connective tissue shots. Let's, like, you know, let's get a lot of, like, these roaming shots and these, you know, we had a very kind of tight amount of footage. And so when things weren't working or when the pacing wasn't right, we didn't have a whole lot of options. You know, we didn't have money for reshoots. You know, that was an impossible thing. We didn't have a bunch of money for stock footage. So we had what we had. And so I think we ended up having to make do with a lot of those moments of pacing and trying to kind of connect things. And so I am forever in awe of the editor's ability to tie those things together so beautifully, and to, you know, to take my very extensive notes and really, you know, run with them and bring their own creativity to it. So really, I feel so lucky because it didn't feel like an uphill battle with the editing team. Mm-hmm. It really felt like they were bringing so much stuff to the table, you know, and I feel really lucky.
And pacing with this one is so important. Because if you lose that pace, then pacing is key to the whole passage of time aspect of this film. We cannot feel that days are going by. We have to have that blur. And you have that.
That's how I feel. I mean, we've gotten a few people who have an opinion that it's too short. I feel like a tight 86 for somebody's, you know, feature debut, where I'm asking viewers to trust that I am not an idiot or I'm not a bad, you know, artist, because this is my first feature. And so I'm like, please just watch it. It's real short and it'll go by fast, and just, you know, trust me, please. And so because I'm asking for that favor from people, what I can give is, I'm not going to take up too much of your time, but just this is an ambitious movie that we didn't have a lot, you know, to make with. But, you know, I felt like the pacing of it, for me, I wanted it to feel like it was a rodeo out of control, you know, and that it wasn't, when it comes to an indie film that's a talkie like this, you know, it can get boring real fast.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's important to kind of keep the foot on the gas, you know?
So I've got to ask Kevin, you know, you've worked with many directors over your career as an actor. How would you describe working with Kate? Forget the fact that you live in the same house, under the same roof, you're married, the fact that, you know, your life could be in your hands depending on what you say.
Forget the gun I have on him right now.
You know, how would you describe Kate as a director?
I'd say intuitive and prepared. I think that in a lot of ways, like taking the relationship that we have out of it, which obviously is difficult to do, but I think I can even just kind of seeing how other people work with Kate, you can feel how prepared she is. And I think some directors go into this, you know, there's this whole misconception with art that I certainly bought into, not that I acted this way, but I felt like it was difficult for me to acquiesce and fully leap into being a writer or actor, because it just seems like art was just something that, an artistic sensibility is something you had or you didn't, and like just talent or something. Going to like a theater program and seeing people who were just naturally gifted, you know, I'm sure that I had some kind of talent too, but seeing people who just rested on this talent, I was just in awe of that. And I kind of, as I got older, became aware that it's a craft like anything else, like being an electrician or a plumber, and you can be kind of, you can have certain proclivities towards it, but the harder you work, actually, the better you will become. It's the Michael Jordan of it all, right? Kate used to have a Michael Jordan cutout in front of her.
Oh, God.
I was like, that's a great gift that you can give me.
Yeah,
Michael Jordan.
Number 23 over here. But I do think that what's nice is that, I obviously Kate is talented, but she works very hard. And I think that when you are an actor and you're on set and you're feeling like the director is one of those feel directors that is resting on their laurels and resting on their talent and thinking, just putting belief in things coming together, it can feel a little egotistical. You run the risk of losing your actors and losing your crew, and a mutiny can happen. What you'll start hearing from other actors as they go back to their chairs, which there weren't on this film, but if you go back to your, at lunch or whatever, or, you know, drinks on Friday, is people start going, the main critique will be like, I don't think they have a shot list. I don't think they know what's going on. I don't think they have a plan. And when you start losing that, you can lose the actors and you can lose the crew. And those are really important things, I think. And Kate, with her acting experience, knows what it's like to have doubt in a director. And I think that she definitely seeks to instill confidence in her cast and in her crew and starts there. And so it's a really nice thing to be a part of something that you can tell that the director knows the kind of movie that they want to make. They're prepared to make that movie. And they're not caught up in any of the, like, superfluous, egotistical, auteur presentation, like the Louis of it, you know, of being perceived as a, you know.
It's like being directed by Travis, you know?
I'm being intimidated and muscled into exactly what she wants. She just is not caught up in, I think because especially her experience around certain, like, you know, very, you know, masculine, if not misogynist kind of directors who are very obsessed with the idea of auteurship. It's just something that Kate isn't, has no interest in. I don't think she focuses on those things. So you can feel that as an actor.
Well, Kate, I've got to ask you, you are in the unenviable position of being one of the main actors in the film as well as being the director. So I'm curious how well actor Kate took direction from director Kate. And if director Kate ever wanted to fire actor Kate.
These are all really great questions, Deb, that we have not been asked.
Yes. Director Kate would have cast anyone else in the world for this part but myself. The reason I did this, I acted in it, is because I was free. I was already there, and we didn't have the budget for another lead actor that we had to put up, you know, on location and all of that. That was the hardest part of the entire thing, is that I felt that I was so focused on the directing part of it that I would show up to set and I would be like, I barely have my lines down. You know, I had so much other prep to do. I was getting way less sleep because I was trying to prep everything and be prepared for everything. I didn't want to let my scene partners down. So it was really a hard, every scene that you see me in, I have a monitor, like a little handheld monitor in my lap. I'd like that I have to see how it's lined up. And I, you know, luckily, you know, because did in 15 days, we didn't have the time. So luckily I would have somebody like Kevin, who I trusted, you know, we have very similar tastes, and I trusted him that if I had him behind the monitor and I was acting, that I could look at him and say, would I like that take? And he would be like, absolutely not. Or he would be like, do another. Or yes, you would like that. We have it. And so because I could trust his taste and his eye, we were able to move much faster. But now at this point, I've actually gotten really good after going through the editing process and the post-production process and screenings and all that. I've gotten really good at seeing Lainey as a totally, as a person completely outside of myself. I can see that actor as just an actor now. So now it's kind of funny when people come up to me after a screening or in a film festival saying, like, talking to me about the acting part of it. I'm always like, it takes me a minute to click in. I'm like, oh, right, yes, sorry, that was me. Yes, it was. Like, it was like a very weird kind of detachment that I think I had to have, because I also had to, I had to pick scenes that maybe I didn't look the best in, or I didn't, you know, didn't love that part of it, but it was servicing the story the best. So it was a lot about separating my ego. You know, there is a certain amount of ego that you have to bring to projects if you are leading a team. That's something I found out really quickly, is there needs to be a modicum of ego, because that's the only way that you can actually direct a project and kind of bring everything to a point. However, anything more than that absolutely necessary amount of ego is only going to make things harder for you. And I think that I had to take out my ego as an actor. I had to take out any sort of feeling in that way in order to kind of like look at the project as a whole and do what was best for the project and not necessarily what was best for my acting ego, if that makes any sense.
I think what's really cool too is you start to look at acting in something like this for her and for myself as just the writer and producer on it, that it was, it becomes like, you know, these characters, as while we were putting so much into them, it's just kind of like one of the tools in the toolbox. So when someone's like, asks you about it, you can talk forever about your hammer, but then it's like, well, I'll also ask you about the screwdriver. You know, it's like,
yeah.
You need all of them to make all of this work. So we were, you know, we would be very involved and dedicated to the characters, and especially when we were playing them. But then, you know, right after that, we yell cut. We also have to clear costumes, and then a location fell through.
Yeah.
You know, so it was like it was a lot of different plate spinning for sure.
Yeah.
Now that this is out into the world for everybody to see, I'm curious: Will you, Kate, step behind the camera again and direct more features? And will the two of you collaborate as writer and director again?
Yeah.
No.
Well, that's simple.
No. No, I, you know, so actually, funny enough, I just finished my second feature about a week, 2 weeks ago. So we were back in Illinois. Kevin was producing on it. So we just had a 20-day on-location shoot that just wrapped. So I'm kind of getting back into, as soon as the Oki stuff, and once Oki is out on her own, I will start focusing on that movie called Be Right Back. That's my second movie, so I'm already kind of, like, moving forward with that. And then, Kevin and I, we love working together, and we love the, we love the crew that we have found, and we have a lot of other things in the works.
Yeah, we're looking at actually a TV project that would be more of a an independent project, so we're kind of in the midst of that, kind of building that for next year, so that's really exciting.
Yeah, so,
well,
you know, we're boots on the ground.
Yeah, we're writing, and in this one, we're actually writing together, which we've started doing that, which has been really fulfilling and great, because I think it's, we're merging the writing and then also producing together. It's just fun to kind of dive even further into working together and making stuff.
Because, you know, being married isn't enough. Living together, it's not enough.
Really test how exhausted I can be by my spouse.
Clearly. Well, guys, you have delivered a wonderful film. It's enjoyable. It's entertaining. It keeps you engrossed as you're trying to figure out many of the different aspects of, are they crazy? Is Louis crazy? Is Louis an arrogant prick? And it really makes you think about the people in your own lives, especially in rural communities where things stand still.
Yeah.
Which is another reason you didn't have to do a lot of pickups or coverage, because there's nothing happening in a one-horse town. So,
nothing to see, but definitely stuff going on.
Right.
Yeah.
So worry about the stuff going on, and you can forget about, there's nothing to see for coverage. Don't worry about it. And this has just been so much fun talking to the two of you this morning. I cannot wait for the next film or the next the TV project. I'm excited to see what you deliver next.
Thank you.
Thank you, Tammy. This was a blast.
This was
such really cool and different questions than we've gotten in this whole thing. So it was awesome
talking. Yeah, we could talk to you for hours.
Yeah, really good. Someone who understands what we're doing, so it's great.
Love it. Well, hopefully we can talk again in the future.
We're talking again.
About anything else.
I sure hope we get to. So get to work. No dilly-dallying. I know it's your anniversary. Maybe you can take time out for a nice dinner, a bottle of champagne, but that, or two, or three, if you're in Travis mode.
You know, yeah, we will do that. You know, we find ourselves toasting with champagne to our marriage and then talking about work the entire time.
And that's a good thing. That's a good thing. So so go toast and get back to work.
We will. Thank you so much.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you. So nice to meet you.
Nice meeting you. Yes, we will, Kev. Yes, we will. Bye-bye.